So, 1-2, 1-2, the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog.
Yeah, does it, like, how? How does it jump?
Quickly?
Yes, okay. Give me quickly.
The quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog.
Okay, cool. Can you show me more lazy in the dog? Make the dog so lazy. Yes, okay. Love the physicality. Show me the puppy dog eyes. They gotta hear those puppy dog eyes here. No. Don't do that. Show me the fox.
Quickly.
Yes, dog. Fox.
Quickest.
Dog. Cool. Thank you so much. Okay, so that's the mic check done. Can we get the real actors in here now, please?
Hello, and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Eli McElveen.
And I'm Sarah, and today we're focusing on ways into some of the editing processes audio drama folks face continually. Things like working with those loony remote actors and directing actors in studio sessions and organising yourself to be as efficient as possible when it comes to that first edit and mastering. So, Eli, hello, super amazing writer, director, editor, producer. Can you tell us what your favourite shows are that you work on right now? And what you do for them, if you will.
My main show is something called Alba Salix Royal Physician, which is a fairy tale hospital sitcom. We're gearing up right now to record our second season. Very excited about that.
Yes.
We've got a spinoff called The Axe and Crown, which is set at a tavern run by a troll.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to recall somewhere like in around episode 8, is it? There's a
It got worse, didn't it?
Took a bit of a dive. there's an appearance by one Sarah Golding. Any relation?
She's some distant drunken something, yes. And you also edit and do all sorts of other pieces for other shows as well, don't you?
Yeah. I've done a bit of sound design for the folks at Our Fair City and 11th Hour Productions and Oral Stage Studios.
Yes.
And I do the interview editing for the Radio Drama Revival podcast, yes, which is tons of fun.
And now, where did this passion come from?
Been listening to audio drama all my life, mm-hmm, pretty much. I'm in Canada. We used to have some on the CBC, audio dramas and sketch comedy, and just absorbed a lot of like BBC stuff as well.
Yes.
Been listening to those kind of all my life, starting with probably Hitchhiker's Guide. And
good. I think today we kind of wanted to focus on a few things that you kind of really renowned for, really. And the first thing we want to look at was just the way you direct folks. You talk about editing as an extension of directing. What do you mean by that?
My partner Sean and I kind of write and direct and produce kind of as a team.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing writing, directing, producing. That lets us kind of look ahead when we're doing the writing to how we're going to sound design it, and look ahead in the directing to how we're going to be editing it together.
Mm-hmm.
So trickier scenes, like if there's a crowd reacting to one of our characters, we're learning as we go what kinds of material we need to get from our actors in order to make that sound as good as possible.
Mm-hmm. I edit more out of things in the actual physical edit, not before I record things, which is a kind of habit I've got into, but also because of time. Do you tend to do those kind of things too, or is it just that you fine-tune things in the edit process?
In the actual audio editing, yeah, there sometimes is a line that I feel just didn't come off, or maybe I even replace it with a line from a completely different episode, like an outtake or something. If I need someone to yell someone's name, I just will occasionally make a very small tweak to the actual dialogue. Mm-hmm. But I'm learning to kind of anticipate a lot of those things in the writing. Mm-hmm. So it's all becoming kind of a big workflow.
Exciting. That I'm
getting better at.
Yeah, yeah. And what are the top things would you say that you've learned of the process in the last few things you've done that kind of were mistakes you were making before but you've fine-tuned now?
As I mentioned, crowd scenes. I like a crowd scene to feel very kind of natural and real. Like, we've got a barroom series. The Axe and Crown is set in a bar. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times there's a character who's talking to all the regulars. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel quite right if they're kind of way in the background. I want them to be very present and upfront and almost as present as the main actors. Mm-hmm. So learning to get all the right material, so all the background voices, and we're learning to record far, far more than we think we need.
Do you have lots of people in the same place, or is it a question of lots of single tracks that are then popped together?
It's just length of time that you spend there making fools of yourselves. I mean, on movies, there's people that go into the studio and just record background audio for big films. Mm-hmm. It feels really good when it all comes together. It creates a really like dynamic, live-sounding room.
Yeah, I think that is often one of the many layers that people do miss out, isn't it? That extraneous kind of background noise that we take for granted in real life, but actually in audio is so important to give that full sound to. And you've mentioned when to tighten and when to slow it down. So
editing is sort of like an extension of directing, because you're like choosing the takes you like and just trying to make the emotion in a moment just right. Mm-hmm. So comedy moments are funnier and the dramatic moments are tenser or more heartfelt. Mm-hmm. In comedy, of course, a lot of editing is like tightening up the pacing. If you've done like any comedy on stage, directors are always banging that drum when they give notes. It's like, pace, come on, people.
Yes, key bite.
And I've heard so many audio dramas where the performances are really darn good, but there's just a little gap between each actor's lines. Like, they're just sort of waiting for each other.
Yes.
That make it sound unnatural.
Yeah.
And just overlapping a little bit can make it sound so much more natural. Mm-hmm. Like, when we talk to each other, we're constantly stepping on each other's lines in person.
Did it then.
So, yeah, for the most part, humans are very good at keeping up with different sides of a conversation. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing wrong with just getting those lines right up against each other. Mm-hmm. If the situation calls for it, there's some times when you do need a gap. And it's all about just sort of listening back and learning to kind of feel it and develop an instinct for, okay, this section just needs to breathe a little more, or this section needs to just be knocking the audience over like bowling pins.
Mm. And how do you cope, for example, if somebody is speaking very, very fast and perhaps another person they're speaking to is speaking quite slowly? How do you deal with that in the situation?
We record in studio, so generally the actors, one of the benefits of that is that the actors can kind of keep pace with each other because they're reacting to each other in the moment. Mm-hmm. If you're dealing with like a remote recording situation where the actors are sounding in their lines, then you may have a difference in pace between the two. Mm. You may end up sort of taking like the slowest take of the fast actor and the fastest take of the slow actor, or letting the fast actor interrupt the slower actor to kind of bring it up so that it's like they're the impatient one. Have you ever heard that? There's an old Bob and Ray sketch, The Slow Talkers of America.
Oh, no, I don't know that one.
One of the two guys is interviewing a member of the slow talkers of America, and the interviewer is just getting more and more frustrated and interrupting him constantly. So that's a possibility.
Sounds
too
superb. And you mentioned you work with studio actors as well as remote. So how is your setup?
We usually have four mics. My scenes are typically like three main characters, maybe a fourth. And yeah, they're just arranged in kind of a half circle facing the control room. Mm-hmm. So it's your typical like engineer and company and speakers in one room, and then the actors in the other room looking through a sheet of glass.
Yep.
one actor per microphone. They can react to us. We are in the control room just listening and not looking at the actors. We're just paying attention as much as possible just to what they're saying. Mm-hmm. I will be sort of skimming the script so that I'm not hanging on every word to go, oh, they didn't get this word precisely right. Mm-hmm. It's more about feel.
Mm-hmm. Say if somebody did have something that you felt needed improvement or just to try it a different way, would you let the scene run?
My actors have sort of asked for, if I start drifting off the voice I'm supposed to have, just let me know right away so that I'm not kind of wasting a whole take.
Yeah.
So we do that. I tend to like to run as much of the scene as possible so that it maintains kind of a certain momentum. Mm. If we're stopping and starting constantly, then you run the risk of the bits of the scene don't all kind of line up.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have part of the scene that's way higher energy than like 2 seconds later.
Yes.
And it'll just sort of drop off. We each have a copy of the script and we're scribbling and underlining and putting little hearts and fix this and things like that. They'll be asking, what am I doing on this line?
Mm-hmm.
I try to write it so that their basic motivations and things are pretty apparent in the script. We record about an hour's worth of finished material a day.
Mm-hmm.
We'll run through a scene, do two or three takes. There's the engineer who runs the studio, and basically the way we do it is we just keep it rolling throughout the entire recording of a particular scene. It's much easier for me to handle in the edit than if everything is split into takes and maybe we double back and can we do page 3 again? And you get outtakes.
Mm.
If people goof off in the studio or something, then you've got that.
Have you ever come across any problems in the studio work that you've done that you've subsequently overcome?
There's been moments when, say, an actor has drifted off their microphone a little bit and they're not just quiet, but you can hear a little too much of the room echo, like the room natural room reverb behind them.
Mm-hmm.
The closer they are to the mic, it changes things about, it'll make your voice bassier because of proximity, but it'll also make your voice a lot more prominent than the natural room.
Mm.
So as they drift off, they will sound like they're sort of retreating into the room. Or in one case, it was a scene set outdoors. If you're outdoors, you don't have the walls kind of reflecting back
mm-hmm.
the sound. And so you naturally raise your voice a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on then to remote recording.
Well, with remote recording, there's a couple extra challenges. You've got like one, unless you're bringing in the actors over like a product called Source Connect Live, mm-hmm. I believe it's called.
Uh-huh.
That will let you kind of sync up your recordings so that your lines, at least, you don't have to go hunting for, okay, where's lines 17 through 30 were at the beginning of this. And
mm-hmm.
so I recommend that kind of thing where your actors can play off each other. You may have a situation where you're getting all those lines sent in separately by your actors.
Mm-hmm.
They may not kind of match each other's pace
mm-hmm.
or tone. If you can, get them to act against each other over some kind of call. If necessary, you can do the read.
And using Source Connect when you are on the call with people. The pressure was that I just didn't want to let you folks down. So it's that whole thing of like, right, you've got to focus on this. And so I did feel like as an actor, there's sort of a pressure on there. I wasn't as relaxed perhaps as I might be if I was doing it on my own, doing the several lines and shooting those off. But it was absolutely exciting and being able to, talk in between to the folks as well. I did feel part of that experience.
Oh,
what would you do if there was kind of a bigger lag between what was being said remotely and otherwise? Can you give any ideas as to how to help with things like that?
From the acting point of view, I mean, play it as you would normally and ignore the fact that apparently the other actor is taking just a little bit longer to respond.
Yes.
In the final edit, you're going to be, as an editor, you're going to be closing up those gaps anyway. There is always going to be a tiny bit of lag, so I end up tweaking those scenes. As it is, we are talking to people over a talkback microphone. We're not really maintaining eye contact with the actors in the studio. So that's, in that sense, you were on a level footing with the rest of our actors. Mm-hmm. So currently, like we will typically have a read through of the material. I'll give notes sometimes. Mm-hmm. Don't quite have that opportunity with a remote actor, mm-hmm. unless they're sending you like a draft. Like, what do you think of this voice or these? Here's a few different ideas.
Yes.
And that's a possibility if your actor has time.
On to sort of organizing things now then. So what people are after is ways into editing. And of course, there's no right one way to do it. But could you give us an insight into how you organize yourself with regards to your projects?
I am usually getting the files from just on a disk, drag those into Reaper, which is my editing software of choice. Mm-hmm. Rename them, obviously, according to character and scene so I can find things. Organizing things so it is one scene per file, or in the case of the Axe and Crown, which is all in one room, basically, it's one episode per file. If you need any noise reduction or any other kind of cleanup, doing that beforehand, because if you add those in as plugins and they're running live in Reaper all the time, that's slowing it down. It's slowing down every time you export a version of that. From there, first thing I do is to color code things. Mm-hmm. I will take all the audio and snip it up into, okay, here's scene, the first half of the scene, take one, take two, take three. Okay, cut those into individual blocks and color code them. All the actors are on separate tracks. If there are multiple actors sharing a microphone, I'll split those onto to their own tracks. Mm-hmm. Any kind of props, I will typically have those nested under the character. If they're carrying it around, I keep it nested under their track so that as I pan the character around the scene, and they often are traveling around in the room, mm-hmm. then the props will go with them.
Yes.
And I don't have to think twice about Reaper's track nesting is really handy for that.
Mm, cool.
We've got kind of a sitcom kind of feel on Alba Salix, so we tend to cut back and forth between two settings a lot. I will keep all the scenes that take place in a given location, mm-hmm. in one project file, so that if I decide, oh, I'm going to change like the reverb a little bit in the palace chamber, I want that to be more prominent. I make one change and it affects all the scenes that are set there, and I don't have to remember to do that. Oh, we've got a lot of entrances and exits, and that way your door sounds are all in the same project and you don't mm-hmm. have to dig around for those too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cut it into takes and then generally start with the last take. Unless I've made a note during directing that such and such was the best take, I'll start from the end, mm-hmm. and drag that in. If there's any flubbed lines or a line or two that I think needs a different take, I'll start digging back and going to, okay, progress back that way and mm-hmm. snip out the bits I need. I'm just copying things back into the scene proper, which starts at like 0 minutes, 0 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it's, adjusting timing and things.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, one scene per file.
What happens next? So you've got these all tracks in place. You've done you've got perhaps all your scenes kind of where you want them.
I'll usually have like the rhythm down, and then start to move the characters around in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're starting to get into sound design a little bit.
Yeah.
I'll pan them back and forth, and also move their level down and the reverb up as if I want them to sort of go kind of upstage, as it were,
uh-huh.
away from the microphone. So if one character's moving off into a corner, I'll bring their level down using an automation lane,
mm-hmm.
and their reverb send, I'll bring that up.
Cool.
So I've kind of got two dimensions, left and right and back and close and far.
Mm-hmm. Regards to the general kind of cleanup of things and tidying up, what once you've got everything in place and you've added in all the effects that you want to, what mm-hmm. do you do next?
I'm usually applying compression to the whole scene as well,
mm-hmm.
and getting that to the levels as even as possible through a combination of actual compression and automation. Best way to do it is probably to use automation. An extra lane below that you can open up below a character's track that lets you change their volume animated over time. That's the same way that I'm handling panning as well, so that the character, as they walk from left to right through the scene, I'll add, okay, this character's off towards the door, and so I'll drag that point to, you know, 30% left or something like that. And then they move to the center of the room. It's just that iterative process of listening back. It's just a big process of mix down, listen back in the kitchen or somewhere away from my editing station and be making notes, bring those back and constantly just improve the scene.
And final mastering, final kind of sorting of everything out when it's ready for somebody else to hear. What do you do to make sure that is the best it can be?
Another project, basically, where I pull in all the mixes of all the scenes, pull those in on a common track, and then alternate those with my little music stings. All of those get combined in one kind of master episode file. I try to do as little compression on that as I can, because otherwise the music can get overcompressed.
So some questions now from our Twitter and Facebook followers. How do you ensure that the audio from either end when you're doing remote recording, that the audio from either end's communication doesn't bleed into the local recording?
I like using earbuds, and failing that, like closed back headphones are better than like open back ones. I highly recommend in-ear monitoring, and keep it as low as you can while still being able to kind of keep up the energy of a scene.
And how would you cope with that bleed if it has happened?
If it's audible while an actor is speaking, then that's a real pain. If it's just between their lines that you can hear it, it's a lot easier to deal with. Sometimes you can get away with using a gate when their audio drops below a certain level. It'll cut it off completely so that any little sounds in the background will be dropped out. If you don't have the settings just right, it can feel unnatural, or it can like cut off their breaths, or if there's a like a very quiet syllable, if you haven't tuned it quite right, you can lose some of those. I tend to kind of do that stuff manually because I'm a bit of a control freak when it comes to this stuff. I'm usually just doing those cuts by hand and making sure that by muting everything else, getting that that one actor's track as clean as possible.
Do you listen at higher playback speeds during edits?
I do sometimes for interviews if I'm going for content. If I'm doing dialogue, typically I am listening at regular speed, unless I'm hunting basically for a particular line.
Can you hear the perfect scene in your head before you start and head towards that? Or do you create it as you go and as the sound builds up?
As I get better at this stuff, I do hear these scenes in my head, and that's sort of allowing us to try out new things. Typically, yeah, I've got a pretty good idea of what I'm looking for, and that lets me, especially with scenes where there's something going on in the background, something going on in the foreground, like crowd noises, or we've got stuff where one character's, you know, having a fight in the background while another conversation goes on in the foreground. Learning to kind of what I need for each of those parts and how much material I need to cover the 30 seconds while this conversation lasts, how much yelling and carrying on I need for the background.
How do you research the appropriate sound effects? Do you have a good way to organize the sound effects in your existing library? You touched on that a bit, but I wonder if you could elaborate some more.
That's been sort of a learning experience too. Like I started collecting things like doors and footsteps and so on and arranging them into... There's things like footsteps which get their own folder and... any kind of impacts, and they're in a different folder and so on. As I've gone on, I've been purchasing sound effects kind of as one-offs as I need them. If anything I can't really fully easily, I don't really have all the... I don't have a good Foley room to smash things up and so on.
We should have asked for one for Christmas, you know?
I know. Things like SoundSnap and Audio Micro found a few good things from there. Mm-hmm. A Sound Effect is the name of a site where I've just bought a few libraries, and they're kind of cool because they've got like independent sound recordists who are offering their own like individual libraries. So
yes, sharing, caring, lovely.
Yeah.
Do you have top tips on how to edit more efficiently and quickly?
I tend to be very slow about everything. It is an insane ratio. Like for season one, it was like 50 hours or more per half hour episode sometimes.
Amazing.
But in terms of efficiency, yeah, being organized and so that you're not sort of digging through to find, okay, what the heck track was such and such on, mm-hmm. or, you know, organizing things into folders, keeping your sound effects organized. I've learned a system, and with every season, the system tends to get kind of stretched to its limit by the time you're done.
Yeah.
And
what are some horror stories from working with remote actors?
Once again, I don't like Skype. Mm. Skype drops out and squelches and is generally hard to, like you couldn't hear what the heck we were saying on our side. I do really highly recommend Source Connect.
Yes. Me too. So. Although as I keep stating, I have found the only bug and I can't record on my end on it. So I still have to do through Audacity. But for the linking up part, it's fantastic.
Get curious about the way people use their voices, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like learn to listen for breath. And I mean, that's not just like people inhaling between phrases, although that's important. And I like to leave those in because it sounds very unnatural if you take those out. Some mm-hmm. people do. Don't snip out the breaths either, unless you are deliberately going for an effect where it's like a big radio ad where the actor is stepping on their own lines. Most shows, you're probably going to be going for something a little more natural sounding. Mm-hmm. And so you will probably want to leave the breaths in. But that's, you know that is an option. Mm-hmm. What else? And also just the amount of breath that someone is speaking with. Like if you try to match up two takes where someone is almost out of air and one where they've just taken a breath, our ears are very attuned to those kinds of things. We notice someone's physicality.
I think that for me would be a top tip for getting ready for performance. Read the whole thing aloud in your voice, however you imagine the person might do it, so you can pick out these little problems that actors might perhaps come across as well. Thank you so much for giving up time to speak to everybody about your amazing editing prowess. And yes, I hope people jump on and listen to your fantastic shows. We'll put all the links in the show notes so people can't miss it. Happy creating.
Oh, thank you. Likewise.
Hurrah! Thank you to Eli for all that fantastic advice, and we do hope you found it useful. Just think about other ways of directing your actors and, of course, ways into organising your editing. And any links to Eli's fantastic work can be found on our show notes, so do take a look at those. And otherwise, huge thanks to Tanya Milojevic for editing this episode and to the Audio Drama Network for housing this fun, informative podcast. Okay, have fun, happy creating. Bye-bye!
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.